Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Here are some things that I can do in 15 minutes. Take a shower. Do a Joe Wicks workout. Think about a new Facebook status, write the status, and then delete the status again because it makes me seem weird. Make a nice omelette, probably with cheese and onion, maybe some pancetta.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Send a few emails. Trim my beard. Get into an argument on Twitter. Or have a conversation with my mate Flav about random subjects, often of your choosing. 15 minutes, open brackets, with Flav and Windy, close brackets. A new podcast where we chat for 15 minutes and then when the time is up, we stop. A good use of our time and a good use of your time. Subscribe now on all of your usual podcast platforms.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. I'm Windy. I'm joined with Nathan and Bardi. Hello, lads.
Hello, Windy. Totti was wrong. One cup. He's never going to win one cup. Kane should leave. Go to Celtic. Win all the cups. Fuck it. Run away.
He scored 4 goals today, man. Don't even be worried about.
Right. We've got no running order. I feel utterly miserable. I don't even know if I can be bothered to host, to be honest. Does anyone want to host?
Go on, Bardi.
Me? No, I can't host. I'm that's not in my skill set. I'm like Moussa Sissoko. My skill set is very limited and very defined. I don't have the ability to knit things together. No. I can run around and pick
straight
up a
lines.
Few loose strays here. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Straight lines,
all,
loose
run
passes.
All day.
Just run all, exactly, I'll run all day. Fill in at right back. But if you want me to set a counter-attack in motion, I've got a really heavy first touch and no vision.
All right. Well, in that case, let's forget chronology. Windy, you tweeted after the game. Do you want to talk us through what you tweeted?
I tweeted that I'm done with Jose Mourinho. So let me read my tweet.
Go on.
I was open-minded about Mourinho and I really liked the early signs and new Jose. My doubts crept in when he publicly destroyed Ndombele. Some of his decision-making around team selection then was eyebrow-raising. I'm done now. Team selections, tactics, use of subs, reliance on brackets bad favourites.
Okay, well, about 20 minutes has passed since then. Do you feel the same now as you did then?
I actually feel more done with Mourinho now
than
I did when I tweeted that. And so what I realised, I actually thought the first half was okay.
Me too.
I thought we played well in the first half. We had some good counter-attacks. Bergwijn was making me happy. Mm. I was very pleased with his performance. I thought Lo Celso played well. I thought we looked relatively solid. We were very unfortunate to go in 1-0 down. I thought Oliver Norwood should have been sent off. The handball incident was very unfortunate. And I felt like we'd win the game. And then we came out. I thought we started the second half on the back foot. There seemed to be a sort of lack of, how to describe it, lack of just, yeah, front footedness, I suppose. We seemed to be too passive, probably the best way of putting it. And then he took Bergwijn off. And at that point, I sort of realised that I'd completely lost hope in us having a chance of coming back in this game. But not just that. It kind of encapsulated my lack of hope that I've had probably since before lockdown started. And supporting a football club is all about a sense of hope and optimism. Definitely. And looking forward to the next game and the series of games and what you could achieve at the end of the season. And I have absolutely no hope for Spurs anymore under Jose Mourinho, and that is why I'm done with him.
Buddy, do you feel differently?
I've always been a bit more hopeful when it comes to Jose Mourinho. I always thought that he'd be able to find a system or something to make us work. But a bit like Windy as well, today the Bergwijn substitution was weird. Bergwijn wasn't doing amazing, but he offered us more hope than Lucas did.
And Son,
to be fair. But then, you know, Son got his assist, and Son, doesn't matter how bad Son is, he's still worth a goal and he's still worth something. And he's one of those players that I would keep on the pitch as long as possible, sure, especially over someone like Lucas. It wasn't even like the fact that he was taking off Aurier and putting Lucas at right back, because that wasn't even that in that substitution thing. It's Mourinho's lack of putting together a plan. He's had a week nearly to think about this match, and that's what scares me the most here, is he's not rushing through games, finding a way to win one game and win the next. We've actually had a lot of time on the training pitch. We've pretty much got a full squad available, and for the players to have a lack of plan, a lack of cohesiveness, and just for Mourinho just to fail to grasp the fact that Lucas and Bergwijn, who I am a fan of, in those kind of half spaces against a really compact Sheffield United team is never going to work. The fear of the chance to hit them over the top wasn't there. They got their goal and they sat back and defended deep. And our lack of reaction to Sheffield United's tactics is what worries me the most.
It's interesting.
Bardi, they had 9 days. They had 9 days to prepare for this. And my overriding feeling was that all of the good things in the first half came through our good players doing good things rather than a tactical system being employed that got the best out of our players. As far as I can see, the tactical system is still, when you've got the ball, you slip into a 3-4-3 with Ben Davies filling in as a left-side centre-back. And the aim is to get Serge Aurier as high up the pitch as possible and put crosses in, which he's very mixed at. His crossing in this game was hopeless. He has put in some crosses in the past, but he is not exactly,
creative.
A threat. He's not creative. He's not a threat. And so that being a primary tactic is hugely problematic. Hugely problematic. And, I mean, this encapsulates everything that makes me feel down about Spurs. Mourinho's four favourites, and I think I can say they're favourites because he does have alternatives for all of them, are Serge Aurier, Lucas Moura, Ben Davies, and Moussa Sissoko, who I think are four of our worst players. I know Sissoko's a fan's favourite, he's a cult hero, but I think they are four of our worst, inverted commas, footballers, and Mourinho wants to pick them over and over and over, and that makes me feel really down about the future of Spurs under Jose Mourinho.
Sissoko shouldn't be in any game where we're going to control possession. Sissoko's not the player to play. He's fine running about, harrying around and tackling players, but in a game where you've got 70% of the ball, you don't want it going into Sissoko and having him trying to dictate tempo. Lo Celso, I thought they did an excellent job on, but he wasn't helped by the amount of times Lucas had his back to goal and the ball went into him and it just kind of literally just bounced off him. There was one where Sissoko gave away a corner from the halfway line, and it was just a collection of bad passing and bad first touch into Lucas. It bobbled up. He chipped it back to Sissoko, who didn't, I don't even know what he was doing. It was bad football, but Tottenham's tactics for the last 18 months have been get it to the good players and let's see what they can do. So there's not much of a change in the system there. But yeah, I mean, I thought Winks did okay against United. Winks played against United?
He did.
Yeah, Winks played against United. Did okay, no? I thought
He did okay.
But Lo Celso has been his replacement and his performance better.
Yeah. Nathan, give us some cold analysis that makes me somehow feel better about this situation. Or can you not?
No, I can. I feel very differently to both of you in that I was negative about this appointment from the off, but I thought that we were fine today, basically, despite the scoreline. I think we've, over the last three games, so United, West Ham, Blades, we've come out with this very sort of original Jose Mourinho, or maybe sort of, I guess to return to the video I did on Chelsea in 14-15, a sort of a C-rate version of that mid-block encounter, occasional bits of pressing once we're attacking the final third, some vague idea, less than vague, but not especially expressive or creative, but some kind of positional system with uneven fullbacks. I've been really impressed with Moussa Sissoko in these last three games. You know, if we consider that clearly our biggest problem area was midfield, I think the Sissoko and Winks, and then even better, the Sissoko and Lo Celso combination looks really well, really good. I've been frustrated with the substitution. Specifically, we're not seeing, you know, Ndombele coming off the bench until just now. We haven't been seeing Sessegnon coming off the bench, but I thought we played well.
Sessegnon wasn't even on the bench, was he?
No, there you go. I don't know if there's an injury there. Maybe that would give him some excuse, but this is a very, very special young player that he's just not seeing minutes at all, which is really frustrating, because obviously we do want to eventually, you know, get beyond Ben Davies, and anyway, this is a distraction from the major point, which is that, yeah, I thought we played pretty decently in the first half. I think we were very unlucky with refereeing and video refereeing decisions. I think that we took our foot off the pedal a little bit in the second half, but we're also seeing more and more of the ball, and it felt like it was inevitable that our equaliser would come. And I think that's why the Blades were able to catch us off guard, because we were relaxed and passive and calm and taking our turn at being out of possession, confident that we would have it back in a minute and we can save some energy, and they just catch us flat footed. And I think that once that second goal went in, once we're 2-0 down, we just we kind of collapsed in this game. I don't think that's collapsing this season away. I don't think that's us collapsing on the current manager. I think that just happens once you combine an unlucky first goal, an unlucky denial of our own equaliser, and then you know, Blades doing really well. I don't want to take away from, you know, they rode the momentum of the game very smartly in this match and took their chance when they had it and just caught us flat-footed, and then. And that was it, you know. But like I said, Kane scored four goals. I tweeted at half time that we were playing functionally but dull, and a lot of people on Twitter were upset that I described this as dull. And I tweeted at full time that I thought we played well, and a lot of people were upset that I described this as playing well. So, you know, it's an interesting game. I don't know. I mean, I've been, except for a Champions League run, I've been very unimpassioned about this team for what is closing in on 2 years now, really. So I feel very distant. I guess that gives me a place to sort of, yeah, like you say, be cold about it from. But I don't think it's worth focusing too much on this particular game, basically.
Yeah, I find it hard to disagree with your analysis of the game. I also tweeted at halftime that I thought we were playing well, and got a lot of angry responses saying this is awful. And I kind of reflected on it and thought, you know what, we're not playing well. We're playing well for Mourinho's Tottenham.
That's fair. I think, I guess rather than sort of try to, for me or you or whatever, to like have a go at Spurs fans or whatever, it's clearly a very divided fan base at the moment, and things are very much up in the air rather than being anyone's fault, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody, no matter what side of the Jose line you stand, I think everyone would be a lot more positive for this team if there was some kind of hope for the future. I said a few weeks ago that what I wanted to see from return from Tottenham is some kind of forward planning for the future.
Okay.
But then all of a sudden, you know, you can sniff top four. Leicester aren't doing particularly well. Everything else, that there's a possibility there. So I was willing to let that slide. I was willing to let the future plans go in the bin. In order to scrape top five. But now top four is done. I want to see the next game. I want to see a blueprint of Tottenham Hotspur next season. I think we should just bin off everybody that he doesn't expect to be at the club. And if that is Ndombele, then don't even put him on the bench. Do an Arteta. Just don't put him on the bench. Stop the conversation and just put your team forward. And this is your team that you want to start next season with. And these are the areas that you explain to the chairman that you want to strengthen. And I think a lot of us would be on board with that. If he has plans for Ndombele to play next season, then he plays every single minute until his legs fall off, and then you take him off, and then you put on Sissoko or somebody. I would take a 3-1 defeat with Sessegnon at left back, even Jedson at right back, and then at least an experimental team that he's learning, and he's going to put those steps in motion for next year. I'd forgive him for that.
Let me make the second point of my thesis on why I'm down about Tottenham right now, and that is that I think Jose Mourinho is an arsehole, and I think his behaviour initially when he joined Spurs was that of a man trying to either improve as a person or pretend that he's improving as a person. I want to give him the benefit of doubt and say that he's trying to grow as a person, and he behaved really, really well in press conferences. I thought he was very polite. He was nice about the club, nice about the players.
It was almost over the top.
Yeah, it was. It was. But it made me feel, oh, you know what? Maybe he's not all bad. And, you know, if we coldly look at what he's saying now in press conferences, he's an arsehole. I mean, the thing in midweek about the drama, about, you know, big clubs have big players on the bench, there's no drama, bloody, bloody, blah, blah. The reason there's a drama, mate, is because you didn't give Ndombele 10 minutes in one of the two games. You gave him zero minutes. You could have quashed that. You could have... There would have no need for any talking point there. Give him 5 minutes. Give him 5 minutes in each game. Show that you're willing to put him on the pitch. Don't just throw him on when you need him, and to the point where he looked horrendously unfit, and no doubt, no reason. Like, obviously he's going to look unfit if he's not had any minutes. Like, he's going to be a big lump if you're not playing him. Oh my God, I just, that really winds me up. The treatment of Ndombele really winds me up, and it might be that he's the worst pro ever, but this is not the way to manage him.
Certainly possible.
But go on. Yeah, but then you manage the situation better. You don't put him on the bench. You just remove the conversation, you remove it, and then you just say, he's not in my plans, and then be done with it.
Exactly. That is no drama. That is no drama.
That's no drama. That's exactly. You just bin him off. But I don't know. I think always recording after a defeat is always dangerous. Just as it is almost as dangerous as recording after a victory where you're all hyped up. The game where we beat Wolves away, you know, that was amazing. We were terrible, but we won the game. And, you know, there's danger of winning when you win the Man City game, for example. So it's always dangerous. It's just as dangerous when you win games and you react to the victory. But I don't know where I'm going to go with this, but I
like a Sissoko surging run.
But you want him gone. Yeah, you want him
redemption.
Gone.
There's redemption. There is redemption in football. There's so many games coming now that we can win the next one, and then you just forget stuff. Things slip away. If you win a match, forget it. Learn from your mistakes, man. That contract, Eric Dyer's contract, if it's in the post, have a word with the postman. It just never gets there. You know, like in Goodfellas, where they pay off the postman, so the little Henry's report card never gets home. So because they've paid off the postman. And letters never arrive. Pay off the postman so his contract never gets it.
Because take a baseball bat to every printer at the training ground.
Nice. Yeah, that was some bad defending. And the you know it's bad defending when you make a good defender like Sanchez look like he doesn't know what he's doing, because you're not marking anything, and you're forcing your other centre back to try and jump across two players to cut out a pullback. He's awful.
The other thing about that though, Bardi, is that I think Dyer had played really well in the previous two games. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. However, Toby Alderweireld is clearly our best defender.
Yeah.
Why is he not playing? He's our best. Not only is he our best defender, he's one of our best players.
It makes sense for him to miss the first or even the second game entirely because of fitness reasons. But like you just saw with Ndombele, and I appreciate that it's harder to sub centre backs on, especially when you're in a losing situation. Obviously, Vertonghen came on as a fullback, but like you want to see with Ndombele, without Alderweireld, with Sessegnon, that there is some kind of sign towards progress, and that they aren't being frozen out of the team. And I think that like Bardi was saying earlier, if you want to be talking about like signs about where we're going, like you can put up with poor performances and poor results if there's some sort of promise. But like if we're sacrificing our record transfer, if we're sacrificing the final couple of years of Alderweireld while he's still at a top level centre back, if we're sacrificing the future of Sessegnon, like what are we sacrificing all those things for? To play mid block and counter and lose to Sheffield United? I think it's interesting what Wendy said about like Mourinho being an arsehole and like him sort of being performatively nice for the first few weeks and then it collapsing, because it's been a very similar story with our tactics in that, you know, when he first got here, it was much more proactive, pressing higher up. And we also heard reports of him giving this presentation to Daniel Levy where he said he was, you know, where he analysed his own weaknesses and explains the way he was going to change how he managed. And again, you know, what we're seeing now, what we've seen in this last three games, and I will again repeat, we've been very functional in the last three games. I've been happy with our performances, even in this loss. The last three games since lockdown is sort of classic Mourinho defensive mid-block and counter, which could well be a requirement of this scenario of the sort of post-pandemic football of no pre-season to finish off a post-season kind of nonsense that doesn't make much sense, and you can put up with it that way. But I don't know, where is the promise? Where is the persuasion that we will, you know, he will once again return us to a new kind of football he's never played before just as soon as we have the chance? And who will those players be, you know?
Well, maybe Bardi's right. Maybe the litmus test is the next team selection, whether he starts playing some of the players that he has faith in for the future, whether we see a few changes, whether he...
When is our next
tries
match?
New partnerships. A few days, isn't it? Jesus, that's a depressing...
It's Sunday. It's on Sunday.
Monday night against Everton, isn't it?
Monday versus Everton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Everton are functioning pretty well at the moment.
He's very PR savvy, and that's the way he gets out of this, because now ninth of the table, miles off top five. We're not going to get Europa League, so now you're going to experiment. Now's the time to experiment. Put Jedson in, start in Ndombele, start Sessegnon, recall Carl Walker-Peters, whoever.
maximum chaos. I want to see Cameron Carter-Vickers start up top.
That's what we should do.
Give Oliver Skip a go at the base of our midfield. Why not? What have you got to lose?
Exactly. There's nothing to lose now. It can't get any worse other than losing to Arsenal. It can't get any worse. That's
ba-dum, bum, we, bum, yeah. bum, ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum.
I'd take finishing below Arsenal if we beat them. I'd take that. Yeah. A little bit of joy.
No, I hear what you're saying. It's been a long time. We're not going to get Champions League. I don't care about Europa League. No. I would rather see us try and fail to do something worthwhile with exciting players than sort of drift through playing, you know, functional but dull football with Lucas, Sissoko and Oria. 100%. I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Spurs fan base would put up with us losing the season out but trying something. I mean, essentially, I think that's what we saw from Pochettino this season for, you know, 4 months, was trying to return to the football we'd played in the season before, trying to integrate our new attacking players and failing. That cost him his job.
Yeah, you're right. And also, you're also right about the functional dull football, Nathan. And the concern with that is functional dull football is fine if you grind out enough wins and if you finish in the top two or top three or top four, but there are too many good teams now. You know, we spoke about how good Man U were the other week. They're a really, really good side. They've got so much potential. Chelsea are a good team. They've got fabulous young players. They're making good signings. They're going to be really strong next year. Liverpool and City don't even need us to talk about them. Wolves are better than us. Leicester are better than us. You know, functional dull football is not going to even get us finishing in the top six next year.
I don't know. I think it could. I think that, again, I'll make that Chelsea in 14-15 comparison. I think it's completely feasible that we could tactically and also on a similar talent level replicate those kind of performances, and I think that can get you third. And I think a lot of fans would be very happy with that. For me, that's not like an aspirational approach to football in performance or result that is that worthwhile. But I mean, if you know, what we'd never do, what would make sense to me is to ride that out, you know, get a Champions League finish with bad football and then sack the manager. Of course, that's not how football is operated. If he's succeeding, he will continue. But I mean, I wouldn't rule out from this point, you know, saying that we'll play football like this next season and we'll amass, you know, 83 points. Because I think that's completely feasible. I just don't think that that is that worthwhile.
It's not feasible if he keeps playing some of these players. You know, we're not going to amass 83 points of Lucas Moura in our front line. That's my fear. This is it. This is what it comes down to. It's my fear that he values pragmatism over anything else, and that is so restrictive and also unentertaining. And actually, I just don't think Lucas Moura is even good in terms of pragmatism. I think he sees him as something he's not, which concerns me.
I don't think Mourinho in his coaching career has ever had a squad this wonky before, because wherever he's been before, at least they've had a semblance of a spine there, and he's inherited a team which has no spine. And then the top of our spine is Harry Kane, who's great, but he's not able to carry this team enough.
The thing is though, Bardi, you've got two players who are solid, who can make up part of a solid but unspectacular in some ways spine on the bench in Alderweireld and Winks. Now, I don't think Harry Winks is a world beater. I said in the last podcast that I would be happy for us to sell Winks or Sissoko. I do think though that Winks is our best possession midfielder.
Yep.
And I think in a game against Sheffield United where you're expecting to keep the ball, playing Winks is a no-brainer. That it seems obvious.
I've got to disagree. I'm really happy with the Sissoko Lo Celso midfield. I feel similarly about Winks, similarly positively, but I think that the Sissoko Lo Celso midfield makes a lot of sense right now, to be honest. I think Lo Celso is our better possession midfielder, and I mean,
oh my God,
go on.
He was just horrendous. He was horrendous in possession today. Like he's really fine at things like protecting the ball and winning it back and laying it off to another player to do something with. As soon as he gets the ball in the final third, it's an absolute nightmare. There's no decision making at all.
Sure, but I don't think Winks gets there.
No, but he gives the ball to other players in that space.
Would you be interested to see a Winks and Lo Celso midfield then? Is that what you want?
Very much so. Very much.
I mean,
so.
I'm totally open to the idea of it.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
We ought to talk about the VAR incident also.
This VAR stuff is bullshit, and it's not VAR being bullshit. It's Tottenham's reaction to, it's Tottenham's reaction to this VAR stuff, which annoys me. The goal was disallowed. Get on with it. Move on. Mourinho, sit down. Shut up. It's Sheffield United. They're terrible. Just play football.
Terrible,
win the game.
I take your general point. Definitely.
They had major injury problems throughout their team though.
It's true.
I mean, this isn't even Sheffield United at their best. This is Sheffield United with three or four key players missing.
We just allow the problem is I hate it when something happens and Mourinho is able to use that as a deflection. And I haven't seen his post match interview yet. I haven't read anything. I haven't seen it online or anything. But I'm sure. Oh, with the VAR, we would have been 1-1. Shut up! It doesn't matter. You overcome that. Get on with it. Yes, there was the elbow on Son, but that I don't think that was a straight red. It was probably a second yellow. But VAR is not there to look at second yellows. The Lucas handball, ridiculous. It should have been a goal, but it wasn't.
Literally, you know, fouled into the ball.
Of course, you're right. Of course, like you are undoubtedly right, Bardi, and Spurs should just get on with it. But I do think it's worth a bit of a deep dive into the process here, because there are some issues, and I don't think the issues are with the video assistant referee, which in this instance, annoyingly, I think the video assistant referee did its job.
Yeah, which is enforced. The rules.
The problem is that the rules are fucking shit.
Yes, but that I agree with the rules are terrible, but. The rules are terrible, but the rules are applied and the rules are wrong. What scares me is that if you allow common sense to then enter the VAR room, which has got Michael Oliver in there, you're even in a worse situation, because they don't have any common sense. They've taken these goddamn awful referees, they've taken them off the pitch, and they've put them in their pyjamas in a room looking at screens.
The eye in the sky.
Put Nathan in there. At least he knows what he's talking about.
No, I don't know what the rules mean. The rules don't make any sense. I refuse to referee until we've clarified what any of the rules are and what they mean. And
put a lawyer. Put a lawyer in there.
No, you definitely don't want a lawyer in there if you want results in VAR within a week.
There's two layers of bullshit here. The bullshit is that the handball law is in some ways simplified now, but it's leading to some ludicrous decisions. So if an attacking player touches the ball with his arm in the attacking phase, then it's handball and goals are disallowed, and that is it. There's no discussion. And the ball was blasted into Lucas's upper arm from point blank range, so of course it hits his arm, and that's the rule, and it's correctly ruled out, but it's bullshit. The second thing is VAR is there to serve a particular purpose on particular incidents, fine, but when there's like an obvious correction to make,
like a red card,
surely it needs to be given a little bit more freedom to actually correct things.
Yeah.
I mean, even with this disallowed Harry Kane goal, the correct decision in hindsight would have been to give Spurs a free kick for the foul on Lucas.
I mean, like, for me, the correct decision is allow the goal.
Yes, well, if the handball rule is good, yes, then yeah, the goal should be allowed.
Okay.
But at least, like, do...
So what it is the handball is a reviewable event, but the foul is not a reviewable event.
Yeah, exactly. It's the limit to which VAR can go to correct things, so you end up with the worst of both worlds. And I get it that they want to protect referees, but as we've discussed before, referees are making poor decisions because they expect VAR to mop up their poor decisions, and it's not mopping up the decisions because it doesn't have the remit to do so. And so you end up with an absolute mess of a football match.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it was. I did find it quite funny when Sheffield United hit the side netting and the guy in charge of the DJ in front of the in charge of the crowd noise put the goal music on, the goal crowd.
Beautiful.
Well, that was quite funny. I was hoping they would have a button that went, as the away fans celebrate the fact that they thought it was a goal. But they didn't have that sound effect, which was a shame. That would have brightened my mood a bit.
So just like, I don't want to pretend when I criticise managers that managing an elite football club is an easy thing to do. It's also not easy to get the rules to the most played sport in the world's perfect either.
Yeah.
Michael Cox has made this point before, but it's like people want two things, right? Fans, football fans across the world, they want two major things, right? They want consistency and they want common sense. And these two things are completely the opposite of one another. So it's a matter of, you know, if Lucas isn't a handball, then why is Llorente's, even though it wasn't at the time, because the rules changed since then, because that's by wording a consistency, but you would also think that common sense would have them opposing. So I don't know, it's a difficult thing to get right, but you can still feel when it's very obviously wrong, and that's where the frustration comes from.
Yeah, there was a real sense of injustice in the disallowed Harry Kane goal for numerous reasons.
Which one?
Sorry, yeah, the Lucas handball.
What about the other ones, though?
What did you think of the other ones?
I missed the mild shove incident on the third one. And the second one, okay, was offside, fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. The shove, I thought, was correctly disallowed, but was...
harsh?
Fairly soft.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know, we're clutching.
Well, okay, ignoring that three of his four goals were disallowed, what did you think of Kane's performance, if you can separate it from the team? Or what did you think of his athleticism, I guess, is the more important question here.
I mean, we didn't... In the second half, we didn't really see much athleticism. He played as a point man, but the ball never got into him at all. I thought he was very cut off. He wasn't coming deep, which was good and bad. He wasn't really getting involved in anything, but I felt he was a threat, and had the service into him been better, I think he probably would have scored a couple more goals. But yeah, so I'm not too down about Kane.
I felt he regressed slightly from the last match, in terms of his touch and decision making, but was significantly better than the first match.
fair enough.
Yeah, he should step away from free kicks now for the rest of his life. He's done with free kicks.
It's the same power technique every time, and he never gets any dip on the ball. Love him to bits, but like, what is the approach there? What is the, like, what is the thinking process? I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's just go short. Every free kick, even direct or not, Just go short. Just tap it, go short and work it.
I would say free kicks and corners, just pass them back to Hugo.
So as we're discussing this right now, I'm watching the City-Liverpool game and Phil Foden has just scored. I think he's scored something like his fourth goal in four games, which I think really highlights the value that the five sub system, obviously he started this game, could be giving clubs like ours who have talent but also have young talent on the bench. Phil Foden has stagnated for so long and it's been so frustrating, you know, for him, I imagine, but watching him as well, especially the comparisons between him and Sancho, is that Sancho's getting playtime and Foden's rotting away on the bench. And now finally, that there are all these games in this period of time, but also all these opportunities to bring young players on, Foden's finally breaking through into the City team. I guess they've just lost the league, so they can afford to experiment. But like we were saying earlier, that's a similar situation for us. I think the Foden situation basically underlines the opportunity we have to, you know, give Sessegnon and Ndombele minutes.
And skip
minutes, yeah, 100%.
We've got some Mourinho quotes, fresh, hot off the press from Dan Kilpatrick.
Okay, yes.
Here we go.
Mourinho, this is on VAR. The man on the pitch is the assistant referee. The referee is in the VAR office. We are going in a direction that's really bad for the beautiful game. The game that everybody fell in love with. And then he also goes on to criticise his players' mental strength. He says, you have to be ready to cope with negative moments and go to the last minute. Now I know more the profile of my players. I felt it. I feared that in the second half we wouldn't be strong enough to cope.
Oh my God, that is so toxic.
Yeah.
That's very Sherwood.
I mean, he's properly throwing them under the bus there. He's basically saying, I knew at half time that we had no chance. So what did he say at half time? How was he behaving at half time to G up our players and send them out there to perform better? Because what I saw in the second half was a lot worse showing than the first half, which implied to me that the half time team talk was no good. So if he's now saying that he knew at half time that we weren't going to win, I mean, that kind of explains away the second half.
This is a very similar squad to one that went to the Champions League final last season. So if there's mental weakness, who is responsible for it?
That seems like a good place to end.
No, Bardi, do you have anything positive? And if you don't have anything positive to say about football, I'll bring this around to all of us. You can say something positive that isn't about football at all.
I'm the positive one in the group. Sissoko works as a defensive player in his own half. I agree with you on that. I'm not too down about Lo Celso, and I still think we've got an almighty player in Bergwijn if used correctly.
Chris, what you got? A deafening silence.
Yeah, I'm down with Bergwijn. I think he's class.
Yeah, man.
It's my girlfriend's birthday tomorrow, and she's been shielding, and I can't wait to spend the day with her.
Hell yeah, man.
Oh, nice. Oh, I'm getting a haircut tomorrow. Come on. That's a real positive thing. Not to shit on your thing, Windy. I'm really happy for you.
Similarly positive event. Okay. If you don't like Tottenham, you can watch other games, and they're never on at the same time at the moment. So there's my positive. Peace, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Cheers, boys.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at @DavyShambles and his SoundCloud, DLindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.